Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 53. A couple of quick announcements. I'm an idiot. Last week I announced that I will be performing in Chicago at Zany's on February 16th through the 19th. That is incorrect information. The correct information is I will be at Zany's in Chicago March 16th through 19th. I'm an idiot by a month. Also, I will be at the San Francisco Punchline from March 2nd to March 5th. And, even sooner than that, the Nerdist Podcast Live will be at SF Sketchfest, also in San Francisco, the weekend of January 28th. So you can get information on all these shows at Nerdist.com. It's just in the little sidebar under the heading that says, "Look at me!" Because I want you to look at me. Why won't you look at me? Okay, episode number 53. This is with Sarah Silverman, and we recorded it at an art gallery called Gallery 1988 on Melrose in Los Angeles. There's a show going on there right now through the 29th of January called Is This Thing On? Basically, the gallery went out to some of the most incredible designers, painters, illustrators, and each of these artists essentially depicted their favorite comedians in different ways, and it is one of the most insane collections of art I've seen in one place in recent memory. There were almost 100 pieces, and if you listen to this podcast, they're all people that you would love. There are paintings of Patton Oswalt and Posehn and Mr. Show and the Upright Citizens Brigade and Human Giant and Bill Hicks and Norm Macdonald and Seinfeld and Red Fox, and it's gorgeous. So if you get a chance, either go there. Like I said, it's running for the 29th of January. It's 7020 Melrose Avenue in Los Angeles, just east of La Brea. Or you can go to Gallery 1988, the number 1988.com, and you can look at the entire collection there. It will blow your friggin' mind. All right, so the other thing is, since we recorded this in the gallery, what we realized as we started recording was it was the most echoey location possible, an art gallery. Who'da thunk? What with the concrete floors, stark walls, high ceilings, and glass that makes up the front of the gallery. So we apologize for the echo. There's nothing we can do, but hopefully the content will make up for that, because Sarah Silverman was a delightful guest, and we were really excited to finally get her on. So please enjoy the Nerdist Podcast, number 53, with Sarah Silverman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah, I got a little setup for you.
Oh, let's get nerdy.
All right.
Oh, my God.
My iPhone would not let me write Nerdist. It's like, Nerdiest? No.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
On the next version, I'm sure they'll get that in there.
The word nerd gets auto-corrected. Like, if there's any fucking word that the iPhone should have been version one.
Nerd?
Yeah.
There are some odd words in there, like Star Wars character names and stuff. You type in, it'll fill it.
Greedo. We're at Gallery 1988. There's an insane art show going on right now through January 29th called Is This Thing On?, where a bunch of phenomenal artists got together and basically produced depictions of comedians that they enjoyed. And, of course, I would not be a true narcissist if I not say that the Nerdist Podcast painting is fucking awesome. Which was done by Casey Weldon.
I look spelt in that, so thank you, Casey.
It looks really good. And Casey also did one of Scott Aukerman holding a wolf with laser eyes.
Yes, and the wolf has large ears. Ear wolf.
But he certainly does.
Yeah, you guys get that now, right?
Yeah, I get it now.
Yeah, I get it. You said it.
It's got human ears.
Yeah.
But
the shirt I'm wearing in our painting is an old shirt that I lost, and I miss it.
Jonah,
it
just reminded me of it. Just a plaid shirt.
No, it's not. Actually, it's not. It's got a little bit of pink in it and blues. It's very good.
Does it make you want to pull that shirt out and start wearing it around again?
No, I lost it.
How do you lose a shirt? Okay.
Vegas.
I drink
your shirt all the time.
Good. So we're here at this gallery with our guest is Sarah Silverman.
Yay.
Who has also been represented twice in the art show.
Actually, one is three times.
I guess, yes, one.
Three faces of silver.
Oh, yeah.
Three faces. And then the other one over there. They're just gorgeous. I'll post a bunch of these.
They're
on...
way too good looking.
No.
You need to go like, oh, you see those? Yeah. Have you seen her in person?
I wish I could say that about mine. I'm too good looking at my painting. Yeah,
no, but they're awesome. I mean, oh my God, that Andy Dick one is really pretty unbelievable. It's so haunting.
The haunting clown. The Brian Posehn one with when he's got the one eye and the old, and then that one with Patton and a sack of Cheetos.
The Brian one's unbelievable too.
And I love Zombie Louis C.K.
Yeah.
So
so good.
Yeah, I'll post a bunch of these on the Nerdist site.
Or just go to the website.
Or you can go to NetGathering 1988.
I love the Bill Murray. Both Bill Murray ones are awesome.
I'm bummed that that Bill Murray one's gone because I would have bought it.
I would have too.
Full disclosure, I bought my own. I bought our podcast one.
Chris.
You should.
No, I felt retarded about it because I'm like, I'm going to buy mine. But I was hoping that if we ever have like a studio, right, we could hang it there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking grander.
You were thinking museum.
Yeah. Podcast museum.
You mean like the Louvre or the Met?
I was hoping this was, it would go up in the Oval Office.
You think maybe it will?
Yeah. Right above the president.
Or in front of.
Just in front of his face?
Right in front of his face. I'm a Nerdist podcast fan. Is that good, Obama? Should I be on SNL? Sarah, thank you for coming and doing our nerdy show.
My pleasure.
Now, let me ask you something, Sarah Silverman.
Ask me anything.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you an open book?
Yeah. Well, I can always just not answer or lie, but I'll answer immediately.
Now I got to think of a good question.
Now, what were you going to ask me?
I was just going to ask you about performing and
that's just how I breathe.
Oh my God, are you okay?
No, okay. Sorry.
That's how I breathe when I'm bored with questions.
No, I'm
such a Todd Glass thing. No, that's how I breathe. Honestly, that's how I breathe.
Did Todd Glass ever do that thing with you where he makes you hang up on him?
Yes.
Has he ever done that with you?
I've hung up on him.
Todd does a thing where he'll go, just do this, it's really funny, I swear to God, just do this. So you ask me how I am, and then I'll start telling you a really sad story, and then when you just and then just hang up on me. So you're like, okay. But put it on speakerphone. It's funny if you do it on speakerphone. So I put him on speakerphone, and there's a room full of people, and I'm like, so how are you, Todd? Not that good. I just got back from the hospital. I think I have testicular cancer. And then you hang up, and then everyone laughs. You can't help but laugh.
So good. Chelsea Peretti will... she does the thing that's funny that in two different scenarios she's done to me. One was we were swimming in a pool and like, you know, running and jumping and catching a ball in midair and stuff, that kind of stuff. And it was my turn and I ran and I like jumped to catch the ball, you know, and splashed into the pool. And just as I was in midair, she goes, Sarah, I have cancer, I didn't know what to tell you. Which is so funny, but it's like I'm laughing underwater and just like drinking water through my nose.
Where are these snazzy comedy pool parties happening?
Well, two summers ago, I realized that there's a pool on the top of my roof, and it's totally heated. I live in a building that's all old people.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I thought, like, what if we used this? So there was like one summer that like Scott and Cool Up and Tall John and Chelsea would just, every day we went swimming and played like 10-year-olds, like got a million toys at like CVS, you know, like pool toys and just acted like jackasses. And
actually, when you were on the WTF podcast, Tall John came over to go swimming. I remember hearing that.
It was like one summer, and then we couldn't wait for the next summer to come, and just, we never did it again.
That was it.
They literally couldn't wait, and they never wanted to.
And they never came back ever again. Can we come over for a pool party?
I would love that.
Jonah will wear his full clothes.
Yeah, I'll be the guy with the shirt out of the pool.
Those are some good times. You forget about pools.
And splashing around and having fun. Because everyone's so busy trying to get fucking famous in this town. People fucking forget about pools.
And it's like really warm because of old people. They make it so warm.
Right.
And I like it.
It's not at all refreshing.
I like it
It's like the pool from Cocoon. It's very warm and they can get eternal
They're
life.
They're stealing the life force from the...
My dad was just talking about Cocoon the other day because that was one of two movies we ever saw together. We were talking about Cocoon and he was like, you know why I love that movie? No bad guys.
Hey, that's true.
So true, yeah. And then the other
government guy trying to get him, or was that Cocoon too?
I didn't.
There's a Cocoon too.
Who watched Cocoon 2, Jonah Ray?
Cocoon, Steve Gutenberg.
He did.
Cocoon 2. And that was one of two movies I ever saw with my dad. I saw that when I was little.
The other being?
The other was Boys Don't Cry.
Oh,
shit. We clearly didn't know what it was about when we went to see it. And really, just...
Wouldn't you be horrified if he was like, there are no bad guys in that one either?
Yeah, technically, it was...
It was horrifying, and nothing ruins the power of brutal transgendered rape like a constant stream of, oi!
I just had a friend. I just had a friend that said she went to her parents for the holidays, and she was like, "And we didn't know what to watch." And my mom had just read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and so we were like, "Oh, let's all watch this." So they all watched The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is basically apparently the cinematic version, which I have not seen. It's just one long rape scene and like brutal rape after rape of this girl with the dragon tattoo.
But she's a computer expert, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching. I never had seen Cape Fear. Me and my mom were watching it, and then she knew the rape scene was coming up, and so she asked me to leave the room. And I found
so
out.
So
she could masturbate.
Nice. That's on her, though.
That's on
her. She should leave the room.
She should. And then I just heard the rape scene, which it sounded horrible. Like, you know when you could imagine things way worse than they can ever be? And like, when I finally saw the rape scene, it wasn't nearly as bad as the way.
Well, he doesn't actually rape her, right? He tries to rape her, and then...
just beats the shit out of her.
And he doesn't actually get the rape done.
Aww. No, you don't see it, but he beats the shit out of her.
Jessica Lange, right?
No. Ileana Douglas.
No, it's Juliette Lewis.
Oh!
You know the girl from The Licks?
Correct.
Yeah, but he bites like Ileana Douglas as they're like fooling around, and she's like, she's amazing in it because she's just like laughing through it, like getting a kick out of it, like not taking it seriously. And then he like bites her nose off or something, or her cheek off, or.
Why not?
She gets Cape Feared. That's what happens. That's what happens when you get Cape Fear. Do you remember Cape Munster from the old Ben Stiller show?
Oh, yeah, that's
yes.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Jesus, okay.
Yeah.
Remember that at home.
Hold on, it's Eddie Munster as...
As the De Niro character. De Niro. Yeah.
It's his old manager, right? Who is he going after?
He's going after the guy who canceled the Munsters.
That's right, yeah.
He goes after the guy who canceled the... I was a young executive at the time. I don't know what... he won't leave me alone. I think it was Odenkirk was the young executive. Did you ever do any... You didn't do the Ben Stiller show, did you?
Mm-mm.
But you've been working.
I was living in New York then.
Was that before that was right around when you were doing SNL?
It was before. It was, I think. I was at SNL in 93-94 season.
Is it
Ben Stiller was like 91-92?
Is it as
it's so you know how like it talk about like how technology is obviously like it's unbelievable what has happened in our lifetime.
Yeah.
When I was at Saturday Night Live, we didn't have computers. We wrote on legal pads and gave our sketches to typists.
Oh, weird.
Nice. I remember that because I was in college around that time, and we didn't have the internet. I had to go to the fucking library.
I had a Commodore 500 or something, like word processor.
Yeah, my roommate had a word processor where you'd have to go and get five different textbooks if you were going to plagiarize properly. And then add in all those so it seemed like it was your voice.
Yeah, I was watching the Larry Sanders show today, and they show the writer's room, and it's just like stacks of newspapers and magazines, and they're like flipping through it. It's like, oh, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of silent guys and girls like at a table
on
their laptops.
It was only 13 years ago or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, it was 20 almost. God damn it, that
it's
hurts.
2011. Jesus Christ.
I know.
Don't date the podcast. Don't date it.
It's any time. It's any time.
What'd you do for the New Year, Sarah Silverman?
Me and my love partner, Alec, stayed in and ordered in and watched the various balls dropping. Ball droppings. And it was fun. It was perfect.
Did you see... did Whitney do something on MTV?
Yes.
She did something with Snooki, I believe.
Yeah, someone told me that they saw it, and they said she was really funny, but the audience was full of, like, people who like Jersey Shore unironically.
It looked like a real hellquake. Like, she clearly had, you know, as she always does, prepared. Yeah. Her jokes were great. And she's standing there. I don't know who I would have gone crazy if I was her. I mean, but she's like a pro, you know. But it's like they have the Jersey Shore, which I was done with them after the first like couple episodes. I was like, oh, that's great. Okay, I'm done. Like, I don't. It bothers me that they're so famous, but it's not that much. But whatever, it's not my cup of tea. So they're on MTV. So Jersey Shore is like, they're there and they're sitting like on the couch or in some little nook area. And then with all her jokes, instead of going to the audience for laughs, like cutting to the audience laughing,
yeah,
they cut to Jersey Shore like laughing. And first of all, it's just no fun if they're in on the jokes.
Right.
And it's not for, they're not the audience. Like, they should have been cutting to the audience for laughs and never cutting to the Jersey Shore during, yeah, after a punchline. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess what we've learned is that don't let MTV shoot your comedy special.
Well, it's not her comedy special.
That would be the weirdest comedy special.
But we flipped around a lot, and I watched, the best was Kathy Griffin on Anderson Cooper. It was so good because it was just like no teleprompter, no cards or anything. So loosey-goosey. And he's like, he's such a like serious, great, awesome newsman, but he still is a guy, you know, one of her, you know, crowd. You know, I mean, I love her too. I'm her demographic. But you know what I mean? Like, you could see he was giddy to be around her.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
And she just makes him giggle. And she was so, this is what she does best. It's live. She's totally off the cuff. Every 5 seconds, she was going, 10, 9. You know, like, it was really fun to watch. I think she's underrated in the alt community.
Well, I remember, I mean, Kathy, boy, I feel like I met her when we were doing that show Trashed at MTV in like 1994.
Oh my God.
I think she was doing stuff on there, and I think maybe she was teaching at the Groundlings at the time or something. And
was that the show where that guy John Bowman was like a floating head?
No, Trashed was a show that I did with Cross and Hossein and Benson and all those nerds. It was like a game show,
No
one remembers it. It didn't last very long. What was the floating head show?
God, something that Roth had something to do with, and I think it was on MTV, and I don't know.
But it's been funny to me to watch. It's been fascinating to me to watch Kathy's career, and especially I just right before the holidays, I watched like 10 minutes of Joan Rivers' A Piece of Work.
Oh yeah.
But it was also around the time of my birthday, and I got really bummed and sad because she was talking about how like, you could see her age, and I mean, obviously you could see her age because she looks like a piece of plastic. But I mean, like, you could see her in her eyes. You could see that it was weighing on her soul that she was 75 years old, and she kept saying like her book of dates was empty, and she was like, yeah, they gave that one to Kathy Griffin.
Yeah, that was her thing. She would always shit talk.
It's heartbreaking because that movie's heartbreaking. It's so good, and it just makes you have so much respect for her, and like, but also it's heartbreaking because it just seems like she doesn't allow herself a moment of happiness.
Yeah.
You know?
But don't you feel, I'm just going to twist this a little bit this
negative
way. Don't you feel like that's, I mean, you're a comedian, you seem pretty happy every time I see you, but.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't romanticize unhappiness. I know unhappiness and depression, and it's, I don't romanticize it at all. I strive for happiness every day.
I think that's a good goal. I mean, so many comics, I feel like we do this day in, day out, year after year. There must be some goal in mind. We want a special, or we want to, you know, like, I don't know, fill theaters or whatever it is. And I see so many people get to that level, and they are just as unhappy as they were before they got there.
You're just trying to fill some kind of hole.
And I'm not saying it's false or anything, and that's not what I meant about Joan Rivers. I mean, she's the real deal, but it's just, I wish so much I could, like, if I could give her, like, an ounce, you know, some of my own happiness, or just, like, ability to be okay, you know, and not be thinking, like, this person has this, or this person has this, you know, it's just like, she's so special and she's so talented, and I'm just like, I wish she could feel it. You know?
Well, especially about the impact that she's had on comedy. I mean, my parents, we used to go to Vegas a lot when I was a kid, and my parents took me to see Johnny Carson perform live, and Joan opened for him.
Wow.
And she was probably like I guess she was in her 40s at the time. So she didn't, you know, she hadn't gone through the physical transformation yet. But, you know, she came out after the show and we talked to her and she was really sweet.
That's
and
awesome.
My mom's always adored her ever since then.
I have some friends that do the art department on her show on Style Network or E now.
No, E! Fashion Police. It's so good.
It's very funny. But they're all, they're just like guys that, you know, set up the table and put the lights up. And she knows all their names, and she's like constantly cracking jokes and asking them about their life. And when they see, when she, the next time she sees them, she like makes jokes about something that they were going to go do. Like she's apparently just the nicest person.
Straight up funny. I mean, like, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, she was funny or she's an icon or whatever. She's like as vital now as she ever was. And that show, Fashion Police, you know, I'm not a fashion person, but, like, I've watched it tons of times because I have a little TV in my bathroom when I'm getting scrubbed, you know?
Getting scrubbed by other people, right? You have a staff of people
A staff of young maidens that scrub me head to toe. No, I don't know. You know, wash my face and all that stuff. And it's so funny. It's like she always has, like, at least a handful of really hard jokes in it. You know, it's so impressive, and it's a perfect frame for her. Makes me happy.
I'm a fan of her Twitter. I'm a fan of her. Like, she has good tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very funny. They're just good jokes, you know, good little one-liners. Even the clips of her in that documentary were perfect.
Oh, my God. And it's her fucking... We can say fuck.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's her fucking around.
Yeah.
You know, it's her... I think her first reaction when she saw it, I believe she told me this, was like, oh, you know, it's not my polished stuff. It's not my, you know what I mean? It's just like she didn't understand that, like, it's amazing to see the immediacy of, like, her weekly jokes she's working on that some work and some don't. It's like it's mind-blowing that she's so vital still. And, like, she goes to that, what is it, the cutting room or whatever once a week and tries out new jokes. And she's like... You know, I don't know. It's pretty mind-blowing.
Have you gotten to hang out with her a lot?
No, I happen to have done... We were both guests on Jimmy Fallon one night when it was coming out, and she just backstage, like, told me a bunch of, you know, told me stuff. And she also... There was an article written about her in New York Magazine right before that, and she... And I had read it. It was great. And she called me. Like, she got my number and connected with me and left me this amazing message that was just how she was horrified that, you know, because she mentions me. And it wasn't even negative. It was, like, it was funny. It was great. You know, it wasn't... I read it and loved it, you know. But she's so sensitive, like, in the best way, you know, she was so worried that I would take it the wrong way or be hurt. And she was like, I'm sick about it and blah, blah, blah. And my words were twisted. And I was just like, I just wanted to lift any anxiety off from her. Because, I mean, I had read it before then and I loved it. It didn't even cross my mind. I mean, maybe it's because I think so much of myself. Maybe that it didn't, you know, I was like, ah. You know, I mean, I thought it was great. And, I mean, she had absolutely no reason to apologize. But it's just so nice that she's very... you know, kind and worried that she's going to hurt people's feelings, which is funny because you could say she's an insult comic, you know, but I think that's probably true for a lot of insult comics and a lot of people who talk about specific people, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
Kathy Griffin's one of the nicest people in the world. She is.
And also, like, you know, David Spade said he got tons of shit when he started doing Hollywood Minute. And then I guess you don't... And I do Chelsea all the time, and I had to start writing differently. Actually, Whitney Cummings gave me some phenomenal advice. She was like, rather than writing about the person specifically and taking shots at them, because your first impulse is, I'm just going to write the meanest thing I can think of about someone, is just write about the situation.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, that reminds me of this... When I try to do this thing, I'm like, oh, my God, that's so... Because I kept saying horrible things about people... And then feeling shitty afterwards, like, oh, that's not who I am. I don't like to insult people, and I'm just shitting on people.
I watch that a lot, too. I watch E, like, on my bathroom TV when I wash my face, and I watch... And I just think Chelsea lately is so tight. It's so good. It's like, she does such a good job. She's such a pro, and she's funny, and, like, you get to know the kind of family of the show, like the backstage antics and the things like that. I think she does a really good job.
I think it's great, and I think I love seeing everyone that's popping. Like Guy Branum is in that Natalie Portman movie.
Is he?
Yeah, he's not Black Swan.
Oh.
He's in the, what is it? The No Strings Attached.
And Sex Friends. Stay Best Friends?
Keep that, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, that's the oddest log line.
Yeah, it doesn't say, I've never heard of the term Sex Friends.
No, Sex Friends doesn't exist and doesn't really roll off the tongue at all.
Sex Friends. Do you want to be Sex Friends? Not now, because I don't like that term that you just
used.
You are
no longer attracted to me.
I would never be Sex Friends to someone who would use the term Sex Friends. I don't know if two of the hottest people in the entertainment industry would just be best friends.
Fuck buddies be best buddies.
They could say, you know, could friends with benefits still
have the benefits of a real that's too long.
That's right. Yeah.
Now you're writing a dissertation.
Right.
I don't know if that would work.
Well, guys.
Yeah, let's just do like that F crazy at star.
little dynamite rocket exclamation point. Wingdings. Wingdings, webdings.
Oh, yeah.
That's why
what
we have
that?
Them.
Is this dumb? Like, if you wrote a letter. If I was a kid today, this is would be my secret club. Like, I would write an email to a friend, then copy it all, put it in Wingdings, then send it to them, and then they would have to take it out of Wingdings and, you know, put it into whatever, Times New Roman.
They would have to select all
and
then change the typeface. Or
that's a good idea. Although sometimes some of the characters don't have a correlating ding. And so you would just get that little box.
But if you write it in regular, and then you transfer it to Wingdings, and then you transfer it back to regular.
Wingding friends. We're gonna do that.
If you're a kid out there, that's what I would do.
I think it's for that.
Wingdings is for that.
Secret letters.
I am going to start sending you Wingding emails.
Yay!
you will be my first Wingding friend.
I'm so excited.
I was just gonna say, drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, that's all I was gonna say.
You know what? When I was a kid, I just remembered this. My favorite thing I ever got, and now I wonder if it would still be cool today to give to a kid, like a 10-year-old kid. Someone gave me a fingerprinting kit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
To fingerprint,
I loved it.
Fingerprint your parents and fingerprint the neighbors.
Fingerprint everything in the house. You're like, you know, you feel like you're doing something.
Who touched this?
I got really excited because at Bumbershoot this year, they had one of the tents was letting people make shrinky dinks. Those little things that you color in, they're like, it's like a thick paper.
Oh, my God, shrinky
dinks. And then you bake them in the oven and they shrink up and harden.
Awesome.
I thought that was such a genius idea.
Yeah, I was at a party once where they had that set up and it was like a keychain. You would like they would turn it into a keychain for you.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. We need to make podcast shrinky dinks.
Let's do it.
I find keychains to be burdens on my pocket.
Yeah. I agree. I just have a keychain that separates my two keys so I can take my car key off and give it to them at work.
Is that a magnet kind of thing?
No, it's just a little ball and socket. Thing.
I don't like having keys in my pockets, that's why I have the little attachment on my belt loop.
Yeah, and you're a janitor.
Yes, exactly. So many keys to keep track of.
Every classroom has a different key.
One of those giant keyring rings,
massive.
And then just have one or two keys.
But it's filled with like those old Victorian keys, those giant brass keys, and then an Audi key. That'd be pretty sweet.
Exactly.
That'd be pretty awesome. Are you performing a lot right now? Are you doing a lot of live stuff?
Not a lot, like New York style, but yeah, I'm doing a bunch of sets whenever, you know?
Yeah.
At UCB in Largo mostly. And then every once in a while, I'll walk right over to the Comedy Store because I live right near there. And I remember one night, like a month ago, I did like all three rooms in one night, and it was so cool, and it's just such a... Each room has such a totally different vibe. Yeah. I think everybody forgets about that the Comedy Store is there. You
know? I remember it's there. I'm just afraid of it.
It is. Yeah. It's scary. You don't know any of the comedians there. It's a whole other world. It's like Brigadoon.
I always think, like, boy, if you can survive at the Comedy Store, two things will happen. You will either get super bitter and angry, or you just become a bulletproof comic.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, what was fun about that is I did the main room, which I was
that's
there
the
to
big
do
one,
like a,
right? Or is that the original room?
The original room's the mid-sized small room.
So the main room seems to always be really good, like the crowds and everything. It's like feels like you're on the road where everyone's psyched to see comedy.
Is that where Pryor did Live on the Sunset Strip? Was it in the main room of the...
Why do I feel like the main room's newish?
It's definitely newer.
Yeah.
Then I did the original room, which 100% of the time that I have ever performed in the original room, I bombed. Like, you can't not bomb, or
it's the worst.
But you go in expecting it, so it's super fun. You just have long silences, and you let everything breathe, or that's what I did, you know what I mean? And there's like a subversive joy in it.
Yeah.
And then I went up to the belly room, and that particular night, they were having the blackest of black shows I've ever seen in my life. It was like, it wasn't just like black comics. It was like, if you can add a couple extra soft A's to black. And that was the most fun. Like, they let me go on. It was the only time where I had a nonstop heckler that was pure joy. Like, we fell in love, me and this girl. And, you know, you just abandon any plan you have and just, like, try to survive. And it was so fun. And then afterwards, I hung out with that girl and her friend back in behind the club, and we smoked pot. And then the guy who dresses up like Jesus and walks all around the West Village came over. And the people who work at the Comedy Store know him, and they're like, "Hey, Kevin." And
Kevin.
He smoked pot too, and it was... I took a picture of it, actually. But anyway, we can move on, and I'll send it to you, maybe.
Yeah, send it to me.
For the website.
I'll put it on the website.
I don't know if that's interesting at all.
Well, you've referenced it. I'm sure people want to see it. I'm sure people want to see the picture of Jesus smoking pot.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, we weren't smoking pot in the picture. I just take a puff as a treat when work is done.
I've seen Chris Rock in the original room up front, and just like you said, long silences.
Yeah.
Well, because
it's Chris Rock.
There's like four people here, and then
there's massive gaps,
and then like two people there.
I haven't been there in years, but the times that I would go there, it was never full.
Yeah,
it was just like, where are these people coming in from?
Yeah, the time I've done it, I remember the first time I was nervous enough as it was, and I was walking up, and I heard a guy just go, "Ugh, another nerd." That's the feeling I had going in there. It's like, I went in there, all the comics were wearing leather jackets, and they're all smoking cigarettes. I was like, these guys are fucking tough.
They're the bad boys of comedy.
And bars.
Do you remember a guy named Steve Rosenthal? He was like a friend of, you know, kind of like a Todd Glass protege, and he played piano. And for a while, he got a gig playing piano at the Comedy Store. This is the story I heard, anyway.
No.
And
no.
One night, he was so frustrated with the, like, false premises of so many of the comedians, or maybe one particular comedian. And so one night, the comic is up. And he, for some reason, they had the pianist plays people on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a mic for some reason. Maybe he introduces the ex. And he's a quiet guy. And this comic goes on, and he's just like, "What? When a cat is caught in a tree, why do we call the fire department?" And then Steve just leaned into his mic and went, "Because they have ladders." I think that was the last thing he worked there.
Awesome.
You know, I'm up here trying to do my art about cats and trees, and this fucking guy just steps all over my one joke.
I'll give it to the Comedy Store to have a comic, so they really power through no matter what.
They have to.
They have to.
It's,
yeah.
I mean, if you think of comedy environments as islands of the Galapagos, you see these very specific evolutions of comics, and very, you know, because you're going to gravitate toward your comfort group.
Yeah.
And so you're gonna see styles that are indicative of where people are performing regularly, and they're a product of their environment. They're a product of the type of people that go there. If you perform for douchebags all the time, you'll probably be kind of douchey because, you know, if you're a performer, you're gonna want to do well, so you're gonna naturally gravitate toward jokes that they understand.
I sent it to you.
It's a great picture.
Oh my God. That is a stunning picture.
No, it's not a stunning picture.
No, that is a stunning picture.
It's
that,
pretty good.
That guy's face.
It was a really fun night where it's like everyone kind of came together as friends and bonded.
You should have gave that to someone to paint for this show. That would have been great.
I'm staring at the Steve Martin picture juggling cats right now, and
You told me an awesome Steve Martin story once.
I did?
You did.
Oh, the Martin Short Show thing?
Yes, but what's awesome now is that, because I'm following him on Twitter, and he's following you.
Let me tell you something. Every week or so, or not on the button, but I mean, you know, I'd look to see who he's following, because he kind of was just following the same, like, 20 people or something.
And they're usually, like, all professional banjo players.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And I didn't think that, I just kind of did it, like, you know, when I'm walking my dog, it's not like I really thought anything, but I clicked on it again, and he was following me, and I was just, like, wanted to cry of happiness.
Yeah.
Because when you told me the story, it was sort of a heartbreaking, like, I could see when you were telling it that it shredded you inside, because you felt like...
I'm sure he would never remember, and he's so, I mean, any encounter, I've had very few encounters with him, he's always really nice, but it was like, you know, I think I was so excited to be on the panel with him that I got flummoxed, and he just basically, I did it, it's such an old joke now, I can't even remember it, and it's dated, but anyway, he asked me to, like, explain it at the commercial break, because he didn't get it. It was like about talk to the hand. That's how long ago. He didn't know what that was, talk to the hand. And I just, like, suddenly got, like, angry. Like, why aren't you involved enough in the world that we're living in that you know what I mean? Like, you know, but I was just like, it's just like, you know, and I couldn't even think of an example. Like, I just was flummoxed and, like, almost angry, but, you know, that's crazy too. And as I'm, like, spitting and, like, trying to explain it to him, and he just kind of very calmly looked at me and said, I'm going to go now. I mean, he was on pace. He stayed on panel with me, and we're at the commercial break, and then he was just like, when we came back from commercial, he's gone. He just, like, walked off. But it wasn't like he was, I don't think he was mad at me, and maybe he would remember it. Maybe, I'm sure he wouldn't even remember this, but it was just like my heart just, like, sank. Like, I just felt like, ugh.
And you just reminded me that Martin Short had a talk show. I totally forgot Martin Short had a talk show.
He's the most... that was, like, the wrong frame for him. He's too great to be, like, a talk show host. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He needs to be performing.
Oh, my God. He's amazing. Well, do you watch Damages?
Oh, yeah. Well, Janet got into Damages, and the casting choices on that show are insane.
It's the greatest show ever. They just started airing it on 101 on DirecTV from the first episode of the
season. I know, we kind of got excited, like, there are new episodes? And we're like, oh, no, they're just...
That's what Alec and I, like, made a plan to, like, watch it. And it turns out that they're running all three seasons, and then in the summer it will start with the new season. But I was just as excited watching the old, like... Anyway, am I still talking? I'm so sorry.
What are you talking about? First of all, this is... You're our guest.
Aww.
And
please direct it.
You have to be nice to me.
No, I feel like... No, listen, I think it's great. We talk over people constantly to tell our own self-centered stories. So when you have a good story to tell...
These are among my self-centered stories.
No, so. God damn it. And what if she's like, I'm going to go now?
That would have been good.
No, I'm saying we talk about ourselves a lot on the podcast, so you are engaging us talking about something other than ourselves, which is really nice.
Which reminds me of something I did once where...
Jonah, that is a great premise that you just ruined. How do you write? I've always wanted to ask you how you write.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I am not as disciplined as I should be. And I'll, for a long time, I really kind of started over, you know, because I had to kind of throw away my old stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm no Louis C.K. who's, like, just...
trying to break records.
Prolific. But I do notice that when I put a couple hours of work into something, you know, it's incredible how much you can, you know what I mean? Like, I started maybe spending an hour thinking about my set before going out, and it's helped a lot.
Well, I think because when we start out, I feel like for me, when I started out, it wasn't, I'm going to sit down and write. It's just, oh, shit just comes to me.
Yeah, and
then you get that pattern.
And that's how it mostly does happen. And for me, Twitter, you would think it's, you know, I think some people think I don't want to waste my jokes on Twitter. I love trying out little premises and things on Twitter, and, like, some of the things I've written on Twitter have become jokes, you know, that have been more fleshed out, you know. I don't think it really burns it. I think it's a great way to kind of, like, test things out. But Some things only work on Twitter too, but sometimes I sit and write, you know, and that's always really fruitful, you know. I mean, but a lot of times I just kind of put a set list together before I go up and hope that something gets realized on stage, because mm-hmm. that's really, but it's better to put work into it, I'm realizing.
It really is.
Little elbow grease goes it really a long is. Way.
But I feel like the jokes in my head that I think are going to be the buttons never are the buttons.
Yeah.
Because the audience in my head is fucking stupid, clearly, and does not know what the actual physical audience is in real life like.
It's also amazing how, one, that audiences totally work as mobs, you know? Like, you can go and do a joke and everybody laughs, and you can go down the street and do the same joke and nobody laughs. Yeah. Like, you go, how is that possible? Surely some people must. But it's like a real mob scenario, not in a bad way, but it's interesting. And there was something else I wanted to say. Oh, yeah, you could have a joke that is not getting laughs. And I remember I had a joke, it never got a laugh, and I gave up on it. And this is a million years ago, and this comedian, Mike Sweeney, who I worshipped, said, I really love that joke, you know, and I was like, really? And it gave me some sort of new confidence that I don't know what chemicals changed in my brain because of it, but it ended up being like my big killer joke, you know, like, and it's just nothing changed other than some sort of, like, confidence or something I had in it in my head. But it's isn't that funny? I bet you guys have examples.
No, of course, because there are jokes that that I would try and feel like, no, I really feel like there's something here, and it's same exact thing, and then it would work once, and then it, just like you said, something would change, and then it would all of a sudden be a go-to. I guess it must be. Maybe it's a body language thing or a presentation thing. Or
I was close to getting rid of a joke, and then I remember we did a show together.
The Dan Aykroyd joke?
Yeah, the Dan Aykroyd joke.
I love that joke.
Thanks. And I remember I was like, I did it a couple times, and like once it did great, you know, and then two other times it just kind of, you know, floundered. And I was like, maybe it was just a fluke. Because I'll always listen to the negative. If like the joke doesn't go well, I'll be like, well, they're the ones who are right. They were correct. The other people, they're fucking dumb. But then you said backstage, you're like, oh, I really like your Dan Aykroyd joke. And I was like, oh, I'll try it again. And then it just kind of consistently became
so
a closer.
I'm excited that not only do you guys relate to this, but I actually am the Mike Sweeney.
Yeah, so that's
but you must know how influential you are on comedy. Everyone, I mean, you're sort of a senior classman.
Ugh.
But in a, not like an old person.
No. You know, I know what you mean. I mean, that you know what, I need to embrace that and be happy about that. You know, it's... There's a weird adjustment from being like always the youngest, or you know what I mean, and then just being, and I always thought of it as freshman, sophomore, junior, senior.
Me too.
Always. But I remember the senior class when I was starting out was like Ray Romano and like all the people that were the, you know, I mean, of course he still is.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like in the clubs.
Yeah.
You know, it was Ray Romano and Mark Cohen and Dave Attell was just coming up even still, you know.
But you, I'm just not sure that you're aware. I don't know if you're aware of that, or maybe if you are, it's recently.
What if I now become aware of it and I'm just a fucking asshole?
And you just, it's not possible. You're too nice.
Aww.
You're too sweet.
Yay.
I mean, even because I'd emailed you in the past about doing the podcast before, and then there are other people, comedians that we know, that are just like, yeah, I'm busy or I can't. And you would always write back these sweet, like, oh my God, I would love to, but I can't. You know, like, just taking an extra step to be nice.
Aww.
Which is so sweet. But I also know that.
But I've got to be the bane of Janet's existence, though, with Sketchfest. Because like, I would clear through so much and go, like, I want to, I don't know, I can't commit. When's the latest you need to know? Yeah. Ask me in two more weeks. I'm not going to do it.
But that's also the curse of being a nice person, is you never want to hurt anyone's feelings. And so you're constantly like, yes, of course I want to help you with that thing. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, I can't do that because I don't have time.
Yeah. No, but it's not even a favor she's asking. It's like something where, you know, comics go up and it's a blast and everyone has fun. It's just like I'm just a huge pussy.
No. She understands. I mean, like, stuff happens. But I remember, I guess maybe 2 years ago,
right after the Comedy Central show was on, I did a show with the UCB, and you were at the show, and I think Scott wanted you to go last, and you're like, no, I don't want to go last, and yeah. So you went up second to last, and then I followed you, and it was really hard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize.
I keep going last.
And
I know that's selfish of me because, you know, whatever, but I'm not confident enough to go last. Like, to me, last is Patton or Todd Glass or Jeff Ross.
But you're there. You're in there because everyone who was at that show was there to see you, and you fucking destroyed. No, it was awesome. I'll tell you, those situations are good. It's just a good situation
right,
to practice.
Totally
like
course.
You know, to go after someone who everyone came to see that crushes, and then you have to still like, all right, let me see if I can keep their attention.
I always do that at Sarah and Friends at Largo. I have a show once a month, and I always go on second to last because I like to smoke a little pot and watch the last person. I never can watch before I go on because I'm like too in my head or whatever.
Yeah.
But I want there to still be show left after I'm on so I can like, because I love comedy.
Yeah, so it's not over.
You're friends and you want to be able to watch them. Yeah.
I'm having a little bit of an asthma. I'm sorry.
Oh, you okay?
I'm all right, yeah.
Do you want some water?
Don't look at me! Yeah, I think I just need to breathe. I'm
okay.
Talking too much.
So, fellas.
Yes, guys.
Episode 53. Wow, Sarah Silverman dies.
Do you have a thing?
An inhaler?
Yeah.
No. I will run get you one.
No, I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Okay.
Can you just stand up and run?
Don't make her talk anymore. Jonah, did you see Tron?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it's fun. It's a big.
How did you have?
Wait, hang on a sec. I just wanted to get back up and talk about how I was always freaked out by the Primatene Mist commercials when I was a kid. Reminded me, your asthma attack reminded me. Watching the animatic of the lungs expanding with the arrows going in from the thing.
Yeah, I used to.
Always freaked me out for some reason. I'm like, that's what my lungs are like?
Yeah. I was diagnosed with exercise-induced asthma.
Oh, you have that?
Yeah.
I think I have a little bit of that,
like,
too.
Well, great. You tell me to lose weight, but if I exercise, my lungs close.
That can't still be the case, though.
That is the thing that I have. But still, the doctors say, I have an inhaler.
It may not necessarily be asthma. It might just be, and I'm sorry to get super nerdy. It may be exercise-induced bronchial spasms, which is a little bit different. Which is a little bit different than...
Chris, I don't know if you know this, but I met a doctor lawyer yesterday.
Matt met a doctor lawyer at his work, where he works for a fruit company that makes computers.
Makes things happen.
Yeah, he
does. So I...
And he fixed a doctor's computer.
The comedy world savior.
I just fixed the internet in here, gallery.
Yeah,
the gallery 1988.
Yeah, now gallery 1988 is in debt.
Yeah, whatever. I'll take a print, Bill Murray. I'm just kidding.
For cuts, for funds.
I know.
But doctor, he helped me. I was like, I have this crazy leg pain, doctor, and I haven't bothered going to the doctor. And
I was waiting for one to come in so I could replace his hard drive and then get free advice.
As soon as I found out, and he was like really excited to help me, and he's like, listen, here's the deal. Tell me what's going on. Let me see your leg. And then like I'm out around the bar, and he's like looking at me, like, he's like, okay, where does it hurt? And he's like mapping. He's like, okay, so that puts it between L3 and L4, and he's like talking about the nerves in my back. And he's like, oh, you probably have a herniated disc.
Oh, did he grab your balls at the Genius Bar?
Twice.
Genius Bar, I mean.
That was before the appointment started. But he's like, don't go to a doctor. They'll fuck you. And I was like, what? He's like, seriously, don't go to a doctor. They'll just try to get money out of you because you probably have good insurance. And they have kids that are in college, and they need money, too. So what they're going to do is order a bunch of tests, and none of these tests are going to do anything for you. It's a herniated disc. You gotta stretch, do some exercise, lose a little weight, take some Aleve for the swelling to go down. It's just swelling of your disc, it'll go down eventually and you'll be okay. And he goes, also, I'm an attorney. Here's my card.
Whoa!
And you guys got drinks at the Cheesecake
There's
Factory.
There's nothing more important for your health, well, there probably is, but then your
Laughter.
Like stomach muscles.
Yes,
that's what he said. The core.
Your core.
The core. There's not. If you do one thing, do core. Stretch a little, walk a little. Walk a little and do your core because it completely supports your back.
Yep.
Whenever my back starts hurting, it's because I'm not working out at all.
Yeah, planks are easy too, and you don't really need a lot of space to do them.
True, right.
Planks hard, but it's Yeah, you can do it for 30. If you can do it for 30 seconds a day.
Yeah, yeah, you'll feel it.
You'll be in good shape. Are you writing this down? What are you
doing? I'm trying to see if I have his card.
Pulling out his card?
No, I don't have it.
What if his last name was just Lawyer? You know, I'm the doctor lawyer.
No, it has his name, MD, on the bottom, attorney at law.
That's weird.
Like, that's a sweet business.
I think he's a con man.
You feel like that?
Do you think he's a Sawyer?
He seemed so nice, and he knew all about the nerves.
You watch Lost?
He's in that guy played Sawyer's in the new Mission Impossible.
We have to go back. Why? Because we still have 12 more episodes.
A hole in my heart from Lost.
Gone. I can't imagine anything replacing the excitement I have for that show week to week.
It's pretty hard. The older you get, the more you cherish those experiences where you can literally be surprised by something and excited.
Yeah. Just being able to talk to people. After was always all my friends, all of us online, just talking theories and sending links from different...
Going on to Lostopedia and figuring
Lostopedia.
Out. I was bummed. I really thought there was going to be some big Hanzo Corporation conspiracy.
Yeah.
And then it all turned out to be the Lord. Damn it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the biggest conspiracy of them all.
Well, they don't mention God. Yeah. Could just
but
effect of the... they do have weird people who guard all evil.
The island.
Twinsies.
The twinsies.
But anyway, Tron. Did either of you see it? Yeah.
I have not seen Tron yet because I'm worried that it's going
to ruin your childhood.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair.
That's fine. You know,
but I
want to
know how
Tron's is not a very good movie.
Jonah, why don't you fucking shut your goddamn mouth? That is.
I want to know how young Jeff Bridges looked.
I don't know.
Was it weird and how
pretty young in computer age?
Okay,
because it looks really creepy when he's all computerized and stuff like that.
It probably looks like he had a bunch of plastic surgery.
Yeah, I don't remember him being so much like the dude in the original Tron. It's like he's talking about these people being born within the system. He's all, it's bio-digital jazz, man.
That you just reminded me. I got Janet and I matching T-shirts on T-Fury, but it's two recognizers and then. The dude and his buddy
John Goodman.
John Goodman, but in Tron gear.
Oh, nice!
It's pretty sweet Tron.
John Goodman was
so
Bridges,
good.
But amazing in that movie.
When he says "take the hill" and jumps out of the car, it's the funniest thing in the world to me.
Yeah,
take the hill.
Are you feeling better now?
Yes, thank you.
Do you need a hug? You okay?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Do you need a lawyer or doctor? I know a guy.
No.
Okay. Lawyer doctor.
Clearly they can't be the same guy.
Really, he's usually
you'd be surprised.
Why are you sending this patient's instructions in webdings? This is what she wanted. This is how we communicate with
She's
her.
She's gonna decode it.
At what point, how long have you been doing comedy for a while? You've been doing comedy for a while.
The first time I did stand up a few times when I was 17 at summer school in Boston. And then I moved to New York when I was 18, and I started doing it, like, right before I turned 19. And now I'm 40.
At what point... You look amazing.
Thank you.
Really.
This is what 40 looks like.
I think
you're fucking hot.
I think... but I think our generation's 40 is culturally younger than the previous generation's 40.
Yeah, because the generation before got married when they were 20 gave up... on life by the time they were 30.
And smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And
Yeah.
That's what's great about Mad Men this season is they show it catching up.
Oh, yeah. I keep hoping that what's going to happen is that in one season they're just going to jump to the 70s and you'll just see that 60s sheen just turn to grease.
They it's so funny because Tal John and I went to Conan when John Hamm was on it, like that first week of Conan. And that's exactly what Conan said. He said, what if this goes on to the 70s? Are you going to wear, like, bell bottoms and, you know, like, fringe? And he was like, no. You know, he's like, I guess if it goes that long, I'll have to. And then Conan said, you should have put it in your contract that you wouldn't go into the 70s or whatever. And then Ham bit his tongue and later said that he was going to say, look who's talking to me about contracts. And I was like, you should have said it. Like, Connor would have loved that.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
It's so quick, you know.
He would have done the thing where he pushed away from the desk and laughed.
Yeah.
Don Draper would end up being one of those guys that totally, that just the years of smoking and booze would just, like, he would look like an old shed,
yeah.
but he would still try to fuck girls, and they'd be like, he used to be really.
Kind of make it like most 70s television, like, where everyone's just kind of shiny all yeah. the time. Everyone seems sweaty in 70s television.
70 yeah. and greasy yeah. and gross.
Brown and orange.
Ugh.
That's like, I don't know what made me think of this, but you know Jim Vallely and
yeah.
his wife Maggie Rowe? I can't remember which one of them thought of this, or maybe they came up with it together. But that people talk to their dogs, they say what they want to hear. Like, they have a friend who is like a like a big like hunk in the, you know, 80s or something, and now is like older.
Yeah.
And whenever he comes over, he'll go to their dog. You're an old guy, but you're still sexy. You know? It's so true. Like, if you think about what you say to yeah, to yeah. dogs.
You're charming. People like you, dog.
It's so sad. Like, cause that, to my dog, Duck, I always go, everybody likes ya. Everybody likes you. It's so sad.
I swear at my dog, but like in a really sweet voice. And everybody's like, you're a fuck stain. Who's a fuck stain? Yeah. Scott, my dog Scott.
I love it. We're just like, Scott, get out of here, Scott. You sound like you're talking to a roommate. That's like,
yeah, that's why it was so weird when I lived in West Hollywood. And I'm positive my neighbors thought I was really shitty to my boyfriend. They'd be like, Scott, get off the bed, Scott. Get on the floor. Like, I was like, they were like, there's a real master and slave component with the couple that live next door.
I love that. My sister just got a dog and she named him Senator. So she'll be like, Senator, please. Senator, no. Senator, don't poop there.
The senator had the floor.
The senator has the floor. That was Laura Silverman.
She's excellent.
I enjoy your sister. She's very sweet.
She's beautiful
and hilarious.
A delight. We did a show together at Largo the other night, and she read her haikus, which are just so funny. And haikus. I love it.
At what point in your writing did you feel like you moved from writing jokes to, these are just sort of extensions of who I am? Like, you were basically just kind of dictating your personality.
Well, oh, that's interesting. I think it always changes because, like, when I did Jesus is Magic. Thank you. But, I mean, that was basically, like, the best of my whole career. You know, it's like people don't realize your first special is great because it's the best of... You know, that. 10 years of material.
I saw that in Kendall Square in Cambridge. I had to go over there to see it. Yeah.
I saw it at Aspen. I saw it at the Aspen Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah, I was there. Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
I saw it at the Arclight when you introduced it.
My...
Oh, well, fancy pants.
Point is, and I think you maybe introducing it and told people to turn their phones off.
No, that's when you saw, you came to see Star Wars, I think, and then
yeah.
you said, shut the fuck up, Jonah Ray, and then made the loudest fart noise I've ever made. anyone ever made.
They're thinkers.
In like a packed dome show, too. That's like 800 people.
It's a dome show.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun.
Did everyone laugh?
Fun.
Yeah.
Did everyone laugh?
Yes, everyone cracked up. And it was, yeah. And then I had to go back to making popcorn. It was good experience.
Good times. Good times.
Good times working at the movie theater.
What was my point? Oh, I think my point was in that I had kind of cultivated this personality of saying the opposite of how, you know, like being, it was a character, like an arrogant kind of whatever. And I think I'm a little bit more... As I get older, I'm like, there's a little bit more of me in that than... I mean, there's a little bit... I'm more myself than, like... But I still kind of, like... I think I always approached a joke, like, how do I feel about gay marriage or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, whatever the topic is, and then I would just go at it from the opposite side, you know, argue the opposite side. But I don't know if I'm still doing that anymore. I don't know. I never really look at it until...
It's done.
Promoting something and people ask me questions and I have to like deconstruct it, which I always say, like, I don't want to deconstruct comedy because it makes you so like identity crisis-y, but then I do it because I love comedy and I'm interested in doing that.
Yeah.
Have you ever met a comedian that doesn't like talking and deconstructing comedy? I haven't.
No, but I feel like I've been hanging out with the same comedians for so long, the group of comedians that I'm friends with all pretty much all happen to be nerds who naturally gravitate towards deconstructing things. So I haven't really hung out with any like hardcore road guys that I don't want to fucking talk about comedy.
There is a weird thing about comedy though. It's where part of doing comedy and starting comedy is not only just going out and doing as many shows as you can, but also after those shows going to a coffee shop with like a few of the other guys and just talking until the fucking morning about comedy. And just, I think that's a big part of it.
I mean, I think you get good at comedy because it's fun to go out every single night and try to get on stage and then hang out with your comedy friends and try to make each other laugh. So it's like, it's your joy that's making you better and better and better every day. It's like, who would, like, I couldn't even relate when I was a kid, young, and in New York to wanting to go to the Palladium or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even then, that was like a nightmare to me.
Who have you seen anyone lately that who are you digging lately?
I went to see Norm Macdonald last night at the Improv.
I can't believe I missed those shows.
So he was at the Improv?
Yeah. I just drove by there the other day and I saw his name on the sign and I was like, oh, that's what I'm going to do on Saturday. And it was awesome.
Nice.
First comedian I ever saw live. And it was in Reno.
Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing.
When was this?
This was in 99, something like that.
So where you grew up in Hawaii, not a lot of comics come through Oahu?
No comics, because there would be no way. It's like the locals wouldn't get it because they're not talking about how Portuguese people are dumb and Filipino people smell. And like the tourists just don't go.
Is that kind of racism par for the course?
No. Like all Hawaii comedy is based in racism. That's all it is.
Really?
That's all it is. Any comic in Hawaii is just. It's like you just point and laugh at all the different races. And it's like if you're Portuguese, just take any Polish joke and make it into a Portuguese person. And that's what it is in Hawaii. It's like the Portuguese people are dumb, and and the Samoans are, violent. Like, you take any jokes about black guys out here, you do it in Hawaii. You just replace black guy with Samoan, and it's just people will just...
So is there a Hawaiian Jeff Dunham that makes puppets out of coconuts and be like, hey, Samoan?
We have the technology to make real puppets out of poi and taro. No, but it's different. I had to leave because I wanted to do comedy, and there was no way.
Is there a comedy club at all?
I mean, you'd think that'd be such a great gig. It's such a no brainer gig to have like
but it's not costing
a Hawaiian.
You want to come to Hawaii and comedy? Yeah.
There's a place now that is a rock venue that brings out people. And Doug Benson was headlining and he asked me to come and open up for him. And that was the first time I ever did comedy in Hawaii and it was fucking weird. It was really
comedy
weird.
In your hometown, man.
I've never done comedy in my hometown.
Yeah.
Which is Memphis. I don't think I want to do comedy there.
Really?
It's weird.
Small town like Memphis? Yeah, who wants to?
Well, no, but there's not really... There wasn't a comedy club there for the longest time. Like, comedy just didn't... I don't
know. Kill in Memphis. Isn't that like you do all your songs and stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All those Southern jokes. I mean, you said you... when you
do
those
jokes... Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, you said those jokes do well in the South.
I gotta stop doing Southern jokes. I've not lived in the South in so long. I've not lived in the South in so long.
I want to go to... I've not... Other than like Austin and or stuff like that, I haven't really been in. I want to go some to check out the South.
I want to see what real people do.
It's, yeah, man.
No, pardon the thing. No, I mean it would be. I would love to go to Mississippi and be like, just be the like odd bird out, and then still go like, this is what you sound like this. Like, instead of being intimidated and being afraid they're going to like string up the Jew, I would just do that.
Sure.
That totally reminds me of a story that like 10 years ago Zach Galifianakis was performing in England and he was bombing with the crowd but killing with the comics in the back. And he said he just jumped up on the stool and started yelling at the Brits, I am an American, goddammit! You respect me when I am talking to you! And like, he totally shouted and got there. I can never pull that kind of comedy off. I can never pull it off. I've wanted to so bad, and it just doesn't work for me.
Need a beard to hide behind.
Yeah, I need a beard. I need a comedy beard. Well, when you're performing in the South and you get off stage and someone says something like, son, you'd be all right. You just need to do jokes about NASCAR and barbecue, stuff that people relate to. And you're like, God damn it. So.
Yeah, but you can, like, we look at the small world they live in, but look at the small world we live in.
It's so small.
Everybody's liberal. And
our world is way smaller. Yeah. Our world is way smaller.
It is.
I mean, how many, you know, how many fucking comedy nerds can there really be in the United States? I mean, there must be, like, maybe 10,000 out of 300 million people are comedy nerds.
I bet there's a million.
You think so?
How many people are in America?
310 million. Roughly.
10 census.
Yeah, roughly 310 million. Out of those 310 million, about 200 million are just Caucasian. And then,
and I say 1% of that are comedy nerds.
1% of those Caucasians.
So you say there's 2 million.
So it might be 2 million people. Yeah, okay. I would buy that. 2 million people.
More now than ever.
Why aren't we getting more downloads then?
Shut up, Matt. We're surfing a river of success. Oh, you don't surf on the river. Fuck. I don't know anything about it.
My doctor says I can't surf.
Oh, no, why?
Because I have asthma from exercising.
The bronchial spasms.
Like looking into a mirror.
A fun house mirror.
I'm a girl and attractive.
Is there anything coming up that you're doing that you're doing that you want to talk about? Cool.
No. Not that's talk-aboutable.
Your show looked so much fun. The Sarasota program.
I'm working on a new show, hopefully. But you know what I mean. Like it's in. Early stages.
When is this episode going up?
Tomorrow.
It's coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Can I get another non-speaking role as Mark in your new show?
Yes.
Sweet.
You'll always be Mark.
Always be Mark.
Does it feel like? I mean, like, you know, the being successful, because you are a very successful comic. Does it feel like what you thought it would feel like? Or do you even ever think about it? Or do you just try not to think about it?
No, well, when I think about it, I go, oh, my God. If me as a kid could see my life, my brain would explode. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's so fun.
I had the same exact thought. Like, when we had Weird Al on, I'm like,
oh, my God, right?
Yeah.
He's the nicest guy in the world. And then you forget that it's Al. And then you stop for a second, you're like, you know, because
Dr. Demento.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We did a show with him, too. Firm and I had dinner with him. With him at Largo. We were doing a show at Largo, and he was in it. And I was like, hey, Mike, you want to go next door and get noodles? And Mike just kind of half, just because Demento was there, he was like, do you want to go have noodles with us? And he was like, okay.
So, I don't even know what he looks like.
He looks like...
Beard, right?
Yeah, he's got a beard. Bad. He's got he has the beard, the top hat, and the tails, and the red.
Did he wear the top hat?
He wore it in the show. He didn't wear it to Noodles.
Did he wear any tuxedo situation?
No. He just wore his college sweatshirt to the Noodles.
All right. What college?
I can't remember. But we talked about how he got to be popular is because in the days when he was in radio, people just didn't have access to music the way they do now, and he knew more and had more records than everyone else.
Wow.
And so that made him a commodity in the world of radio because you would bring your own records.
Oh, wow.
And so that's kind of how he carved out his niche because they were like, this guy's got everything.
Yeah.
And that's why they started putting him on the air.
That's so great. Oh, you okay?
I think I'm having bronchial induced spasms.
Oh, I just learned that's what I had, not exercise.
Well, Sarah Silverman, I think we're at the end of our hour.
I feel like I gave you 110%, but in the past 10 minutes I've been kind of taking a back seat, and I apologize.
It makes you feel
well. We wanted to make sure that you were okay and that you weren't like in the corner having an asthma attack, and we're talking about Tron. Everything's gonna be fine, guys.
Talk about something else. Hey, do you guys see Tron?
that makes it worse. Don't talk about nerd stuff. Do you like nerds, right?
Do I like nerds? It's my world. Nerds.
Okay, good.
I mean, what do you... What?
Have you seen her boyfriend's childhood room?
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Do you know Alec at all? Alec Sulkin?
I've met him twice at Largo, and he was a super nice guy.
Funny Twitter.
I went to his childhood house in Massachusetts, and His bedroom is, like, untouched, you know, exactly.
Like a child died and his parents didn't want
to... Yes.
This is where Alec used to sleep.
It's odd, but it probably makes sense because he, you know, when he was 14, he went away to sleepover high school. So it's like, yeah. It's not like he became an older kid. And it is wallpapered, all Star Wars wallpaper.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It's just, the whole room is covered in Star Wars.
Did you? And you must have tweeted somewhere. It.
I tweeted it, yeah.
Why didn't his parents do anything? Or why didn't he take it with him?
Take the wallpaper with him?
Don't think
do you not know how wallpaper works?
Is it? Well, no, it was actual wallpaper, or he had posters up all over his walls? Like, as if...
No. Actual wallpaper.
Oh, shit.
Would you,
yeah,
do you mind sending me that, too, and I'll put it up?
My childhood bedroom had just, like, movie posters, just, like, no spaces in between, just straight across.
Yeah, I did that.
Top to bottom, all the way across.
Yeah, I had weird posters in my room. For some reason, someone gave my parents, like, 20 copies of two different posters. And one of them was a poster for the Eurythmics, and the other one was for the band Taco.
Wow.
So I had androgynous Annie Lennox and putting on the Ritz Taco.
That's awesome.
And of course, you know, which protected, like watched over the Darth Vader helmet, which was also the case for all of the action figures and chessboards.
Can I show you this? It's a video that's like 10 seconds long. And I also posted this online of Alec on Twitter, rather. This is us Skyping, actually, but...
Is that somewhere online that I can drag it over to the website?
I tweeted it. Oh, you know, whenever this was, I was in Canada and we were Skyping. Skype is the greatest.
What do you, is funny the most important thing for you with dudes?
No, but I mean, I can't get a boner for someone who isn't funny.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of funny people that I... You know, that it's... They have to be also kind and loving and all that shit.
And nice and sweet.
Yeah.
I'll cut this out if you want, but you told me something that Jimmy Kimmel said once that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard, where he said to you, "Guess where I'm gonna fuck you? I'll give you a hint."
Well, of course, that is a joke. That was always a joke because I would never let that happen. But that is, I forgot about that. That was funny. God. And one time we got to see Coldplay sing a song, and they sang Yellow, and he said, "If I sang this to you, it would be called Brown."
Jesus.
But I'll send you this Alec video because it's funny. I don't know if you want to.
I would appreciate that.
This would be our most multimedia podcast to date.
Awesome.
Picture and a video.
I feel like we should start adding, like linking back to stuff on the site so people can see extra stuff and have a reason to go there.
Definitely. You got to get traffic to the site.
Come on, man. We got to. This is the digital age.
You got to get traffic to the site.
Now it's unique visitors I'm looking for.
No, page views.
Do you want a 1.5 second video? Because I thought I was taking a picture of my dog's bleeding asshole that I thought I might need to take for the doctor.
Sure.
Yes, I would like that, as a matter of fact.
Personal use.
All right, this might be a big hit on the website. I can't believe that.
Now, was that really a bloody? Blood. Was that really a bleeding asshole, or did she have the blood pellet in there?
He's gonna be 17 in June, and when he shits, it like every time it breaks open, like that same wound, and it bleeds. But now I've got him on this all these like stool softeners and everything. It takes me like 20 minutes to fix his like. Meals because they have to like soften the, you know, it's very interesting. But anyway,
The poor little guy.
His poops are like really soft, and it's crazy. You don't know it until you have probably a kid, and what I know of a dog that you know they make a healthy poop at 16 and a half. You're like, good boy, you know, you're so happy. God,
Yeah, my dad used to say that, like, when you're young, you never appreciate the value of a really good shit. I'm like, Merry Christmas. Nice to talk to
Chris,
you,
Chris, gather around. I'm going to tell you about my shit.
Remember there's a story about Colin Quinn walking out of a bathroom and, like, just looking white as a ghost and someone saying, like, "What? Are you okay?" And he's like, "I just took a shit that smells like my father's shit." There must be, like, a moment in time for men that, yeah. Oh, God, I've...
Yeah, there was that peppery smell of an old man shit. It's really fucking
peppery?
God. Yeah. Peppery?
What's in the Hawaiian diet, pepper?
God, Duck, my dog's shits have been so painful for him. It's so hard to watch. He actually makes a G sound, which I didn't know is possible for animals. He'll go like...
Get the salve. Do you have to put salve in?
Well, what I do is I wipe his asshole with, like, one Preparation H wipe.
Mm-hmm. You're a good mom.
Yeah,
that's what a good mom does.
So is our like, anal glands fucked up?
Yeah, they're, like... Well, you
that's no. I had a smaller dog. It's about the size of her dog, and, like, you know, she had a lot of anal gland problems. Though. They would get infected, and they wouldn't work.
Maybe that's Myra's problem.
He's okay.
Has anyone expressed your anal glands lately?
They're fine.
Need to express your anal glands.
Do you express them? Yes.
He's got beautiful blue eyes that float over his natural brown eyes.
That's glaucoma.
But I'll tell you this, I gotta go home because I'm meeting Alec at 7.
Well, thank you for taking time to come and chat with us.
It was a delight. I love it. It's so fun.
Yeah, anytime you want. You can come on here.
Crazy.
Every week. I'm just saying, every week we should all get together.
And I bought a poster of Bill Murray.
I'm gonna get the Clark W. Griswold one.
It's sold out.
What?
Oh, I got it.
Clark Griswold sold out? God damn it!
Which one?
The Clark W. Griswold.
Oh, God, I love that one. I know it's sold out. It's so great.
Oh, yeah, so for anyone else, gallery1988.com, and the show runs...
We'll link to it as part of our multimedia
podcast.
7020 Melrose Avenue, and the show runs till January 29th.
Pee Wee Herman... Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Pee Wee Herman one, the Bill Murray one, the Brian Posehn one. It was just, like, incredible.
Norm MacDonald as Turd Ferguson.
Yep.
That's so great.
Bunch of Conans. There's a Flight of the Conchords dolls. Yeah, it's
Norm MacDonald as Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, sorry, it's Turd Ferguson. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Enjoy your burrito!
Now leaving Nerdist.com.